Doers, mowing season is here. With Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower, just $329 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Hello and welcome to this newest episode of the Scrum Down NBC Sports Rugby Podcast. I am your host with the most, Alex Grubisera, and it is great to be back, everyone, coming off the back end of a big weekend of rugby on NBC Sports. Here in America, we had the Rugby World Cup Sevens, which we hosted across NBC, CNBC, Peacock. Lots to talk about on that. We're going to have Dan Lyle on to recap some of that as we covered it across the weekend, making my hosting debut in studio, which was a big marker for me and I absolutely loved it. And then we're going to get on to the Premiership. Premiership rugby has kicked off. The opening round went down on Peacock TV this weekend. We've got a special guest to talk about the Premiership and a lot of other topics, none other than AJ McGinty, USA Rugby superstar, new signing to Bristol, and the one who kicked the winner for them to take the win over Bath on the weekend. We'll hear from him and we'll also review some of the Premiership action on the weekend. Lots of things to look forward to. Thanks for listening. Let's get on with the show. Welcoming USA Rugby Hall of Famer and NBC pundit Dan Lyle to the Scrum Down. Dan, welcome back on the Scrum Down. Second appearance in this new rebirth in video that we have, but let's get into it. We had the Rugby World Cup Sevens across NBC Sports all weekend. It was great atmosphere, great to be on camera together in studio as well. But, you know, let's talk with the men's bracket first. We had New Zealand losing to Fiji in the final. Fiji avenging that loss in LA. You know, what did you make of them in the tournament a little bit for them throughout the weekend?
Yeah, Ben Goings had his side primed for that tournament. They never looked like they were going to lose that tournament, Alex. You know, certainly 1 through 12 all, you know, performed extremely well. They used his entire bench. Six players scored in that semifinal. Five players scored, all individual players, no back-to-back, no tries, no braces. You know, so the entire team was used, you know, and their skill sets were in full display. The offloading ability, as we know from Fiji, was awesome, and they just were in full flight.
It was outrageous, mate. Like the lack of rucks, the ability to keep that alive, the flow they had. Like in LA, they looked hot at times, but in that final, they really came unstuck. And, you know, this was much more the Fiji-esque that, you know, that beat South Africa in the Commonwealth and just put that stamp on the game. Like their attacking rugby was amazing. But what I loved about them is that final, second half, two yellow cards, and their defense is what won them the competition. Unbelievable. Like you said on the show, the way they go hunt teams, they use their physicality, they're a nightmare to try and play against. They smothered New Zealand in that second half to really make sure they didn't let that game slip away from them.
Yeah, they're almost like, you know, Panthers or Lions in that hunting, right? Where they're not just attacking you, right? Boom, 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 hyena style. They keep you in front of them. They find you. And then they isolate you and they pounce and then they come in, you know, all together. It's a really when it's in, you know, in form. When they're in form, you know, they look fantastic and you know, well deserved. And you know, you couldn't pick a MVP because I thought there was four or five of them that were just, you know, outrageous. You know.
And just so cool, you know, it's their second Rugby World Cup, won the other one in 2005. And, you know, you've got to credit New Zealand that these guys
thrive in these competitions. Back-to-back champions, hadn't lost a game since 2009 in the Rugby World Cup 7. So I think for Fiji to go out there and take them out in the final, it stamps it really well that they were the sort of best team in the competition. Now let's transition to the women's bracket, where I felt the final again had the two best teams. These teams are going to play each other a lot over the next years, a couple years, I'm sure. Australia, New Zealand, Australia coming out victorious, and they just looked a bit of a class above at times. They just have the all-round package, the ability to move the ball, the ability to play. They have running threats, and then their defensive hustle. That's where I think Coach Tim Walsh has taken them to the next level. He's harnessed the attack, but the defensive work that that team has now is outstanding.
Yeah, you got to be super connected in the game of sevens, right? Obviously, in rugby, you have to, but in sevens, it's even that much more important because the ball is going back and forth. I agree with you, Alex, you know, that Walshy's been able to really bring that defensive prowess into their game. But they were the most exciting team to watch as well. You know, the New Zealand are the all ballers, mate. They invented almost in the women's side that sevens, you know, theater capacity, you know, all skills, all the time game. But, you know, Australia's almost taken it to another level. They found, you know, ways of not just you know, offloading, not just being balls in hands, not but power, pace, connectiveness. It was really, really great, and what a great final.
It was outstanding. And it's just, this is the thing. A year ago from now, you would have said no one beats that New Zealand side, especially as they got Portia Woodman back right on the back end, but they still had so much talent. There's a few missing with injuries and stuff at the moment. Nathan Wong and Ruby Tui's with the 15s and, you know, a few, but really that team was untouchable. And for such a short turnaround with such a young side as well, that has so much room to grow and improve, it's a scary thought for the other teams that are running into that Olympics in 2024. How do they catch them?
Well, I mean, triple crown, right? Commonwealth series winners and now Rugby World Cup winners. You know, look, they did not look fantastic against the U.S. side that was probably overperformed to get to fourth place. And so they are vulnerable a little bit. Sevens is one of those games that'll humble you very quickly. As you said, Fiji was humbled against New Zealand earlier in the tournaments in LA, excuse me. You know, so it's a game that can come back and sneak up at you if you're not in full flight. Look, those girls performed together because they were collective, you know, and Walshy had them, you know, really buzzing. You could see the smiles on their faces, you know, during the anthem. You know, both teams, to be fair, but they were just so happy to be out there, so happy to put their shoulders around each other, arms around each other. So it was just a great spectacle. Well deserved, those two teams in Australia, you know, to come out in the final.
Nah, I agree. All right, let's transition to the US. And, you know, the men's very disappointing coming in 11th. It all kind of got unstuck for them in that opening game against Samoa. And, you know, it's been a tough run since the Olympics, since the sort of disbanding. A lot of the OGs of that team, some moved to MLR, some have, you know, sort of retired as such. And the team just is got a lot of youth, a lot of inexperience, and it was hit with injuries at the moment as well, which I thought just diminished their ability to compete with those top teams. But it's still a little alarming that how much of a drop-off that they have had from where they were only in, you know, 2018, 2019, where you'd argue they were top three in the series.
Yeah, you need, you know, two or three playmakers, you know, to rotate through your team. When Madison Hughes stepped away, Stevie Thomasine, Kayvon Williams stepped up. Obviously, Folau Nua had that horrible injury. He tried to make a comeback, and they really haven't settled on that. Obviously, Kayvon Williams being injured. So they're and Madison Hughes, is he coming back? Is he not coming back? Right. So that whole playmaker side of it is out. You know, the aerialist, the side of it that Zach Test and Colin Hawley, and then obviously Ben Pinkelman and Danny Barrett took on. You know, Jay Schroeder took that mantle a little bit, but then got injured in LA as well. And rugby is really a game of that you have to play well together. We talked about the Australian women's team just looked like they were in each other's pockets. And I just thought the U.S. team has got to really reboot, find that consistency, find those selections, probably find two or three more players. And it's all for 24 now, right? 2 years run in. Yeah. They got to think about who they are and use 22 and 23 season on the series to find the combinations, find the new players, you know, find that confidence and really, you know, just just play and maybe even find a new style, depending on what all that stuff looks together when as you mix the cake batter.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think that the fact that, you know, some of these senior guys who are still hanging around now, but your Perry Bakers, that will they make it to the next Olympics? They still got it. Like, it's still got it. It's just an uncertainty. It's probably the last Rugby World Cup we'll see for Perry Baker. Will he make it to the Olympics? Will more sort of the veterans drop off? And then it's an even bigger sort of task to elevate what you have now to your experience and still fill within underneath as well.
Yeah, we need to see, you know, the depth chart, you know, 1 through 4 in all 12, 13 positions, see what that's going to look like, you know, how and who's going to be coaching this, you know, on a year-round basis. Mike's, you know, comes in and comes out, you know. You obviously got Ben Pinkelman now and Zach Test that are in Chula Vista down there helping to train, you know, some of these ancillary tournaments. You know, in L.A. we have a great elite tournament, so I'm really interested what that second level is going to look like. So LA is important, not just for the starting 12, but the next 12 below that. So all of that is important, and you got 2 years now.
And then the US women's team, you know, they came fourth place, which on paper looks very, very good. I do think their performances weren't quite as strong as the Finnish showed. They had a very good game against Poland, who actually went on to win the challenge bracket. So you know that they were a good team. So I think they started hot, but then after that, just didn't really quite find their form. Scraped by a very young Canada side. You know, then they had the game against Australia, and you know, it was just a tough ask for them, and then losing the last one against France as well.
Yeah, you know, their form and where they finished really flattered, I think, what they were actually putting on the field. You know, and that's not about effort. There's effort and execution conversation, but it's about game plan. It's about combinations. It's about, you know, the combination of the ladies from sevens and 15s, you know, who the right, you know, players are. And really, you know, you have to be able to step off of off of both feet. You have to be able to, you know, sit players down. You have to be able to, you know, do more than just, you know, create a mismatch from a big and a small and just use your pace out wide. They need more dimensions. You know, they need more dynamics, you know, within that team. So I think the tactics and strategy, as well as some of the combinations, you know, need to be refreshed a little bit. They too have 2 years, right? So this is a team.
Yeah.
It feels like in transition too, although they have more of the players right now and those that are coming to come back from the 15s World Cup as well. You know, do they stay? Lev Kelter, to me, you know, when she's on form, that team was on form in sevens, right? And she chose to go to 15s, or maybe it was chosen for her to go to 15s. And you know, we need players that, you know, are able to run straight, run direct, but also run some angles, offloads, etc.
No, completely agree. I think the middle playmaking is the big issue here. It was at times very lateral, very one-dimensional. You know, you've got to credit the athletes in that team. Alona Ma trucked, you know, a number of people straight through. Jazz Gray had some bright sparks, especially someone so inexperienced on the circuit. You know, the Nia Tapa had some moments. Kershi's still in the mix there. But I just felt like that try against Australia where Heatherland goes through the middle, we need to see more of that. More stressing people in the middle, not allowing people just to drop off and sort of shepherd us to a touchline and then come at line speed and try and pressure their skills. Because that, to me, right now is the issue. And it is a little bit worrisome because this is a team that wasn't that much different on paper. Like, there is some change, but it's not incredibly different. But a year ago, they were beating Australia at the Olympics. Do you know what I mean? Pretty much a year ago now. And so that is the only thing that to keep an eye on is Australia have gone up leaps and bounds and US kind of have to find their mojo, because otherwise they will get left behind by those top two. You know, France aren't far behind. Fiji still have growth as well. You never know what Canada are going to do if they get some time together as well. US just doesn't want to fall out of the pack because, you know, that program needs to medal for really the catalyst for the explosion, which I know is one day going to happen in America, is women's rugby and especially sevens. They are such a catalyst for everything that we want to go well in the sport over here.
Yeah, I think we know what they're not doing right now. You know, I think it needs to be a little bit more apparent, transparent, you know, from the, what they're going to try to do and what their, you know, what their game plans is. It's not a state secret. You know, when you look at the United States, you know what the way that they're going to play, right? So they need to be a little bit more unpredictable, find ways to, as you said, go through the middle, offload games, play in some layers and all that stuff. And so, not knowing what's going through the coaches' heads and what's going through the program right now, you know, certainly they need to improve. Otherwise, they're going to get left behind. I agree.
No, definitely. And this, you know, some bright sparks and some exciting stuff. I think some players that were maybe, you know, inexperienced before and maturing into veterans and leaders on that side. Sam Sullivan, you know, looks like, you know, a revelation for them. Came on, didn't have many moments, but when she did, she looked sharp. And I've seen her play some club rugby as well. And she's a well-rounded player that I think they could, you know, look to use a bit more. And they just got to get back to the kickoffs too, man. Like, that team usually holds onto the ball and they trash everyone. But at the moment, they're not back to where they were in some of those areas. And, you know, Alev's restarts make a difference. Abby not being anymore, obviously a difference, but they still have great aerialists. They still do. So they have to sort of come back to some of those key KPIs that I think make them, you know, the team that, you know, we all want them to be.
Yeah, I agree. You know, enough said, but, you know, certainly room for improvement. Yeah. And fourth place is no, you know, is no mean feat, but, you know, we just see the potential and opportunity, I think, yeah.
No, absolutely. Dan, thanks so much for coming on the show. It's great to have you. You know, we've really appreciated it. Loved working with you on the weekend as well. And I'm sure we'll see a lot more of you on the Scrum Down this season.
Yeah, thanks, Alex. It was fun. And good luck with the Scrum Down. I'm really looking forward to not only being on in the future, but seeing all the special guests you got lined up.
With Spring Black Friday deals at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop Spring Black Friday deals for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Color selection varies by store. Limit 60 bags per customer while supplies last. Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, you put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor, because you know the bigger the fight, the better the reward. Medela, the mark of the fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Well, that's a wrap for Dan Lal on the show, but now we have our big guest of the episode, USA Rugby superstar Bristol debutant on the weekend, kicking the winning penalty to beat Bath on the weekend, none other than AJ McGinty.
All right, here he is, our big guest for this week's Scrum Down episode, USA Rugby and Bristol Bears rugby player, AJ McGinty. AJ, welcome to the pod, debut on the Scrum Down. Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, pleasure to be here. Thanks very much for having me on, Orbs. Appreciate it.
Just coming off the back of a big weekend, back in Premiership action, you know, not long sort of pre-season time to get settled into Bristol Bears, but you guys got off to a winning start and must have felt good to kick that last penalty at the end and, you know, just get the, you know, get the juices flowing, but also, you know, get the lads in a bit, you know, just feel like you're part of the team.
Yeah, definitely. I guess you could say that. It's obviously first experience playing in sort of the derby as well against the local rivals, Bath. And even though the game got postponed, like the atmosphere and the turnout was phenomenal. Like it was, the juices were flowing on the sideline as I was like crossing my fingers that they'd bring me on. But it was unbelievable to get on and then to win as well. It's just like the atmosphere is incredible and kick-start the season off on the right foot. So very pleased and everyone's happy today in camp.
Well, let's talk a bit about Bristol Bears and your, you know, your short period of time there. But, you know, what sort of made the move? You know, you've been at Sale for a long time, very established, you know, made yourself into one of the form 10s in the competition. Was it the connection with Pat Lamb, or what got you to sort of consider Bristol as an option?
I think having worked with Pat before, previously, like, obviously I didn't get off to a great start in Sale, but I was kind of in chats with Pat, like, in my sort of early years at Sale. But that nothing came of that. And then, as you said, I was like six seasons at Sharks, which was unbelievable. And, I love my time there. Like, it flew by, but I guess I just felt that I needed a change, really. Not that I was lost my passion for it at all. I loved the place, but, I guess with the way I kind of approach my own game and the learning aspect, I felt I kind of got to a point at Sale where I'd worked with the coaches for 6 years and they taught me a lot and developed me a lot on and off the field, and something new was just what I was kind of chasing, really. And I kind of gone into a contract year where, like, previously with Sale I would have signed before I go into the sort of my last year, and this time I was kind of open, and that kind of made me dip my toe in the water and see what was out there, really. And and it happened to be Bristol, and obviously very, very happy decision I made. And the place down here is incredible. So still settling in day by day, getting more and more comfortable, but I'm enjoying it.
And then, you know, leaving Sale, you know, you're a big name player there, and announcing when it gets announced that you're leaving, you know, does that affect the run in at the end of the season, or was it a smooth sort of, you know, final run in there?
Yeah, it's got, like, obviously I've never experienced that before. So for everything that Sale did for me, obviously I wanted to, you know, finish the season as well as I could and play my best rugby. Now, I picked up a niggle, so that kind of prevented that. And I didn't get to go out in the swan song and repay everyone, like the people there, the coaches and the fans, for what they did for me. But I guess over the years I developed a lot of good relationships that obviously will withstand me moving to the Bears, so they just won't like me for two games a season. But it felt like the right time for me.
And then, you know, how has the move to Bristol been? Obviously not been there too long because of international commitments, but, you know, it's a nice town, Bristol. I really love it every time I go there.
Yeah, no, it is. It is a popular place. I think before moving over, everybody that I spoke to, obviously, because I've only lived in Manchester, never been to Bristol Bar for games, but everyone I spoke to, like, speaks so highly about this part of England. I'm actually out in the sticks a bit. I'm like 30 minutes north of the, or 20 minutes north of the city. It's an easy venture in. It's very nice. The move down, we actually arrived down with two lorries full of our stuff and weren't allowed in the house because the paperwork had been messed up. So there was a bit of a spanner in the works early on, but we managed to get that sorted. And I think with anything, you obviously moved a lot in your life. Moving and having kids, we're a month here now, and there's just always seems to be something to do in the house. So it takes a lot of organization. Lucky my wife has been a superstar, and she's taken care of the majority of it and give me a few little bits and pieces around the place to do.
Good honor, mate. Good honor. And then obviously, you know, what do you make of Bristol this season? You know, last year was, you know, they came off a really successful season the year before, dropped off in that semi-final versus Quins. But then last year, it just didn't click for them at all. Everyone thought it was going to be another step up and would they be contenders, and they went the other way. But what have you sort of felt with the preseason you've been there for and the team on a whole? And you did look back to more the Bristol Bears that we sort of expected in the game against Bath on the weekend.
Yeah, like, well, firstly, like, because obviously it's pretty much a brand new facility, like state of the art, and it's incredible. Like, I was lucky in Sale with the facility we had there, but then this place is like just custom built for rugby. So Yeah, everything is like exceptional. They really like, they haven't missed a trick. So in terms of coming down here and, you know, performance or development and like sort of reaching new heights, you know, this is definitely like a really good place to be. So I'm fortunate in that aspect. And as you said, I think even the game back made that like a dog fight really, which I guess is the derby and then their style. So coming through that and it was how we kind of weathered some purple patches was really good. But I've been like really impressed with the place and sort of training standards, the intensity of it all. So it was some tough sessions when I arrived. Obviously I had a few weeks off after the America camp, but the first 2 weeks were pretty brutal.
And how has Pat been? You know, you work with him back up till sort of 2015-16. Now you're back with him this time. Is there a big change in him? Is he exactly the same? You know, what's your observation so far? On the spot.
Been changed. Well, like I think the one thing is just like the passion for it. Like that's the like, I guess if you meet him, you chat to him about the game. It's just his passion for it and his knowledge for it. And I guess as well, because he was he played as well and he played at like incredibly high level. He's probably got a great understanding of it too. So, it's been good. Like there's the obviously, I think Brist are known for sort of the way they move the ball and how they attack. And I had an idea of how they go about that with my time in Connacht, and then now here as well. Just the detail that goes into everything and sort of players understanding the game and their knowledge of it is really good, backed up by probably the amount of work you do on just the basics of the game, like your catch and your pass, and like over and over again, the repetitions of that, just that like the simple stuff that you could probably overlook, like it doesn't happen here. It's like mornings, afternoons, it's skills, it's passing, to then obviously be able to execute that under pressure. So it's been very, very impressive.
Yeah, I've always heard he's a big like attention to detail sort of coach, like no stone unturned type of vibe.
Yeah that's it. It's very measured, but it's also exciting as well, because I guess like sort of your attacking plan for the week and how you want to break down a defense or set piece attack, there's a lot, like it's even for me, like coming in, it's a lot more than what I was used to. And then, but I just like kind of lads that have been here a long time, it's just like you say one thing and they all know what to do. So I'm hoping to get to that stage pretty soon, because
keep studying, mate.
Yeah, got to do my hit the books and do my study.
And is that Bristol style of play, was that a factor in coming to the Bears? Obviously, Sale had a slightly different style, like, you know, played in the right areas and had moments, but Bristol seemed to be much more sort of ball in hand sort of team.
I definitely like that. And that was probably the like fascinating aspect of it when Alex Anderson came in and his sort of the defense and the kicking game, the transition obviously of what he helped develop at Saracens, you know, the detail in that, like I love that too. And for the team we had at Sale was like, we were just a lot of big angry men that want to beat people up. So that worked really well. I guess here it is a lot more focused on like with the ball, the expression, your ability to like catch pass in a straight line and sort of stand up defenders, 2v1s, 3v2s. That definitely was a factor. And I think as well, like my love for the game like probably extends into coaching it as well. And like when I was in Manchester, like I did a bit of coaching away from like my own training. So learning new things as well, and that was a big factor. Obviously work with new coaches is beneficial to that too, so that was part of it too.
And I guess Bristol, you know, you've got some big name players across the board in that team, and also some big sort of reinforcements coming this year, yourself and Genge, just two very sort of noteworthy signings. And, you know, in that opening game this weekend, you get to see those players in fruition. You coming on and Genge is just some player. Like him and Sinclair together is like the Bash brothers. Like that to me is as good as it gets as a front row pairing.
I know. Yeah. Obviously, would have prepped for playing against Genji like over the years, and been like, well, just the first try for like a loose head forward to do that, like breakthrough two, dummy the fullback, and then I think his second try was just you're like under 10s rugby, give it to the biggest kid and like let him run through everybody. So first, like, kind of like blown away a bit, like when you watch him on TV, he actually doesn't look as big as he is in person, which is weird. But really, really, really powerful guy. And I think obviously he's returned, like Bristol's where he grew up. So he's very like emotional and passionate about that game last week. And geez, he showed it on the pitch too.
Mate, he's just leveled up, mate. Like I had to talk props on the scrum down. I couldn't not, but you know, that guy is just... He's just rewriting the ceiling of where props can be. Like, you know, the thing is it maybe took him a couple of years to get that set piece down, which is always, you know, just time in the saddle and reps to get to like test level scrummager. But he's got to that. But then I also feel like his dynamicness is even better now than it was when he was younger, where that would set him apart. Now he's actually got like black belt set piece, and he seems to be even more of an animal than he was before. It's incredible.
Yeah. And when I had come down and just popped in, he was obviously, he must have been just back from his Australian tour, and he was back in the gym pretty quick. Like, so there's no off switch with him. So I think they actually had to tell him, or he's the ORFU rules is that he has to have some time off. So yeah, he had to be sent away, I think. But I think himself and Kyle probably. Yeah, brilliant scrummagers, and then different. Kyle's got some lovely touches around the field. He's very skillful too. So
soft hands for a battering ram as well. I'm a big fan of Sinks as well. All right. Well, last question on the Bristol Bears. But you know, what is the sort of goal of the squad? What's the internal mantra? Like, where are you guys aiming for? Top four? Kind of win it? Like, what's sort of been the chat as a team this season?
Yeah, listen, I think like expectations, of course, are going to be high in Bristol. And, like, it's a funny thing, like, about like every game is kind of my sort of new sort of headspace is not having any expectations and not trying to control anything, because I find I play better that way. Or like, you know, when you go out to a game and you're just trying to
bang on, mate. Gonna go? Bang on.
Yeah, how's it going to
go? Get out of the future. I always tell myself, back to the moment.
Exactly. I think there's obviously like since I've been in there now, I won't say culture, but like the team spirit, the way the boys sort of interact with each other and get on with each other is like they're a very, very tight group, which obviously goes a long way to winning anything. It's probably the most important thing. And then the hunger and the commitment. Listen, the preseason was tough. So going into the season, listen, finish as high as possible, win the most games. That's what we're after.
And it's going to be a competitive one, mate. Like all the teams are looking sharp. You know, a few results going different ways, but I think this is just going to be another tight year running competition.
Yeah, well, like as you know, like it is grueling. The teams are getting better and better, so. It's probably, winning as many games as you can by like not burning out the squad as well, because I guess that was probably one thing I found last year was maybe with Sela, maybe burnt out a bit, but it's just so important to get that aspect of it right in the league.
All right, let's move on to USA Rugby. And, you know, quickly, for some listening, you know, they might not know sort of your origin story of how you played for the United States, but you came over here from, you know, to play at NIAC, New York Athletic Club, play your rugby there, and then through residency and doing a master's here, you eventually found yourself playing for the Eagles. You know, how sort of roundabout a way was it that, you know, you got to where you are now, but it's probably one of the most unique ways of anyone doing it?
Yeah, like... I when I first got over to NIAC, it was just kind of like I finished my university in Ireland and got a J1 visa, and a good few of my mates are moving over to New York to work and have a good time, really. There was like, I think out of my year, there must have been like 20 went over, and then there was 50, and then there was 100, and like just an incredible year in New York. And I was playing a bit of rugby as well before it had gone over, and that sort of got me lined up in NIAC. And through NIAC, played against Life University, who were down in Atlanta, and played them home and away. And then in like a semi-final of the competition of the Eastern Conference. So like my head was blown away with even that, of like playing in New York, but we were flying to Dallas, flying to Atlanta, flying to all these places. It was incredible. But that sort of ran into my time down in Atlanta studying and coaching and playing in there. It was like 3 years of residency, and then an opportunity to, I guess, like in an Eagles camp or domestic players camp before sort of the pros, the overseas guys. So yeah, like I said, a roundabout way. And obviously a lot of people to thank for that. And then fortunate that, like, the ball bounced my way and my body was healthy and all that stuff. But that got me to a World Cup, and through that, Connacht and then Sale. And now here I am in Bristol. So, bit of a mad story.
Well, for me, it's an incredible story, because it's like, you know, you obviously sort of didn't go the traditional route, you know, especially in sort of the IRFU, where you get streamlined into, you know, the provinces, then play for Ireland. But there's an argument that, say, you had or hadn't, and say you weren't capped for the United States, that you might have ended up playing for Ireland with the form that you've put into the premiership and stuff as well, which is amazing for America to have a 10 of that caliber. But I think it's generally true. Like, same with England, after being there for 5 years at Sale, I reckon there would have been an argument at the time you might have got capped there as well.
Yeah. I don't know about that, but I think before I'd gone over to America, I was kind of like maybe looking at something in England or like a championship, but I never really like sent out any stuff. But then again, when I was that age, I just didn't have the size for like your modern day rugby player, and did some age grade stuff at Leinster. But John Cooney's, who's at Ulster, was like the nine that was my age grade. He went into the academy system, so that had kind of passed me by. But I need to get over to the States and beef up a bit.
Yeah, this is the place to beef up. Tell me about it. It's my constant battle living over here now. It's just not to get over 122 kegs. It's a constant battle, mate.
Yeah, well, you went the opposite way, didn't you?
Yeah, I'm very different. Exactly. I played USA under 19s, like under Salty, way back in the day when I was like 16. Wow. And I just got no love. I could obviously play for both, but I got no love from England at the time. And then my last year of school, I just developed massively. Like, I got way taller, started lifting weights, and that's when I got into London Irish Academy, and that's where I got into England everything. And, you know, I always think, what if, because I had a place at Cal Berkeley, and I don't know, a lot of people know, but my plan initially was to finish school, go play at Cal under Jack Clark. He'd helped like recruit me, and that was going to be my initial plan. But London Irish contract at 17 was too good to turn down. 1 year, deferred it, and then after they offered me a 2 year, then I sort of closed my the book on California Corbs, as I call him. Yeah. But I always wondered where he might be, and then now I live in California. It's quite fitting as well. But all right, let's transition to USA Rugby, and it's been a bit of a tough sort of year or so for the Eagles, missing out at the back end of 2021 on automatic qualification as America's One, losing to Uruguay in a two-game series that, you know, the loss they threw away at home must sting so many. But then you didn't play in those, but then you were part of this summer where the campaign against Chile, home and away, and unfortunately, down at the wire, it fell apart.
Yeah. Still can't believe it, honestly. But I guess, listen, it happened for a reason. And but truth is, just not like good enough for us, really. Credit to Chile, like they were a tough side, and they battled away. But it was a game that, I think the first game, just the conditions was just a mess, and was just great to get in and out of the place, Santiago, as quick as possible. But then coming home, like, I was full of confidence, thought we were gonna like put a number on them, really did, and they got it to a 19-0 lead, and then kind of they just clawed back, and down to the wire, just lost by a point. So, listen, like for me, as far as like camps go, and again, I think a big thing that's always spoken about is time together, and I do feel that's important, but. It's like the guys have, I think since that Chile game, has been like not that we needed a wake up call, but it is a wake up call. And a lot of lads question themselves, and I think just over the last 2 months and the chatting through the WhatsApp group, just kind of putting something in that we don't get to November now, and we've put ourselves in the same position. So thankfully, there's another opportunity to get to your World Cup. One that we all really want to like take advantage of. So the lads have been slogging away and putting in a lot of work when, you know, there's no rugby on right now for lads based in America. They're all doing individual work, so probably sacrificing a lot. And when you're running on your own, as you know, it's like dark places. But a lot of the lads have been doing. The workout's been sent to them, and I think they just have a camp organized now that everyone's arriving into and hit the ground running from here. And obviously, it'll be three weeks in Dubai with three games to win. So that's just where the focus is.
And, you know, what do you put like the game, the loss of that second game in control, 19-0 up, as you said, down to just lacks of concentration? Is it fitness at altitude? Do you think that's an issue? Or where would you put your sort of finger on of how you get the game to get away from you? Because it's happened a couple times for the Eagles. It's not just a one-off, and that's really why I'm asking someone very much in the know.
Yeah, I would say fitness is definitely a big part of it. And I think that's what we spoke about as a group. Like our standards need to improve. Like I'd say since like I had said it about since 2018, that was probably our peak of having like a really successful year. And I don't mean like it was really successful, but we won games in 2018. But after that, there was like a drop off, and there was a drop off in like our intensity on the pitch, and there was a drop off in just the overall fitness of the group. And then I think with the MLR, which is brilliant, and you're hoping like guys are playing more competitive games, but it's still not at the level of the international rugby when it's just a different type of pressure and a different type of intensity that like I think if we're honest with ourselves, if we were a fitter side, we wouldn't blow like a 19-0 lead, or we wouldn't let it collapse like that. So, even for me, because not having played a lot of rugby towards the back end of the season, the second half of that game against Chile, my calves are cramping up, you know what I mean? And that's not good enough either. So, it's not like, when the game is, you can feel them sort of creeping in, you've got, kind of mindset shift was to protect the game and not go and win it. And that's probably the thing that hurts the most from my perspective, because guys are probably responding off sort of the what I'm giving out, the energy I'm giving out. And if I'm trying to like protect the lead, well then everybody's going to feel that way. So that's probably the biggest learning for me from that Chile game. But like as I said, there's as horrible as it feels, like if we could have still won that, and just little things went away. But then would we have this deep honesty and like sort of break it all down? Probably not. We'd be like, we got through it. You know what I mean?
No, I know what you mean, mate. Like I thought, you know, as a caliber of players on the field, far superior side. Like I do, there are mitigating circumstances. Chile have, you know, pretty much year-round time together, that squad, and from the club to country, so much continuity. And, you know, as you get into games and deeper in and fitness, all of that stuff together does add up. But I also just feel like I also feel like USA was so much better than that, what sort of happened in those games. And I guess, like you say, it's a big motivation looking forward. But Now it is, you know, last chance saloon. You pretty much have to go 3 from 3 in Dubai. My understanding is that the domestic players are going to get a bit more time together to prepare to condition out there. And then you, the international boys, you'll just join in sort of week of that first game.
Yeah. So the lads got together this week, and there's camps and then sort of build up games, warm up games into that. So, yeah, not going in entirely cold, but then obviously the guys that have got their domestic seasons in Europe, obviously it's not reg 9, so we don't come in till November. So, like I think as well, probably, I'm not sure if like obviously the other teams, like what their schedule is like, or are they coming in like fully cooked too? I'm not sure of that, but yeah, I think that's a big factor of probably Chile's time together, because look back at like four years ago, I think like where you're putting 60 points on the team and a lot of their, like obviously their captain who was on the receiving end of that four years ago, like speaking to him, and some guys bailed and then they had to get guys that were fully committed, and then they've had all that time together and they play in the Slar tournament. So it is like the time together is hugely beneficial for then understanding when, I don't know, certain things don't go your way or they're going your way, how you sort of stay on task and not get distracted or loss of focus. So, I think narrowing it down to one thing is tough. It was a bitter pill to swallow.
Well, mate, I will leave it there, mate. We wish you all the best in those games. Obviously, good luck with everything with Bristol as well. We're excited to see you out there. You're a flag bearer for the United States, playing at the highest level and really standing out. It's a, you know, it's an ace up the sleeves for US to even have a caliber 10 like yourself, mate. So thanks for that, and thanks for coming on the show as well.
Thanks very much for that, Cords. Appreciate it, and all the best, and hopefully see you over this side soon.
Cheers, mate. Appreciate it.
So good to have AJ on the show. So much insight from the man. You know, it's both our touch points here with NBC Premiership Rugby. Reminder, that is on Peacock TV live and on demand every weekend. And also USA Rugby as they continue their hopeful quest to qualify for the 2023 Rugby World Cup in the repechage coming up. But that is a wrap on this week's show. Big thank you to all of you listening, or if you're watching on the NBC Sports YouTube page, thank you so much. We appreciate the support. Keep liking, sharing, favoriting, retweeting, telling your friends about the pod. We are going nowhere this year. We're going to keep growing, keep trying to cater to all the audiences, US-centric, but also around the globe, with some great guests and insight that'll be coming up in future weeks. Thanks again, and we'll be back next week.
With Spring Black Friday deals at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop Spring Black Friday deals for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Color selection varies by store. Limit 60 bags per customer while supplies last.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.